So, Rob.
Hey, Jersey.
Back to just me and you.
Yeah, we had a guest last week. That was really, really fun and totally different. I mean, we'd done almost 60 episodes with just the two of us.
Wow, that's hard to believe.
Just the two of us, you know, kind of way.
it made it, it livened things up. It freshened it up, and it made it not quite such a dreary tedium looking across the screens at each other. New fresh face in there.
Exactly. We had the pitter-patter of someone new in our lives. And
is that what having children does? Now yeah, I'm sold again.
Yeah. Makes every moment of survival that much more crisp.
So it goes back to that Secret Wars 2 story where the Beyonder's trying to figure out what's the whole meaning of existence, and characters one after another keep talking about, like, you don't know how alive you are until you think you're going to die kind of thing. And his whole problem was he was a god, and so he couldn't die, so he could never understand the wonderful complex frailty of being a human being. Is that what having a child does to you?
Yes, exactly. It reminds you of how frail you are and how difficult everything is. Yep.
I'm back on the maybe I should have kids wagon.
Okay, cool.
It'll give me a zeal for life because it'll be that much harder. So, okay, this is this is not the Let's Have Kids show. This is the Lead Into Art show where a couple of visual storytellers get together and wander around a topic. We start out 1,000 feet up, and then we hit the ground with a few actual useful, what would you say, action items. And we sandwich that between a curveball where we throw a difficult question at one another and try to wrangle with it. And then we end on a takeaway where we reflect on something that happened to us this art week. My name is Jersey Drozd, and that other guy is...
I'm Rob Stenzinger, who just learned how to talk today. Rob Stenzinger, my word.
We'll fix it in post.
Totally not.
That's
all right.
We do everything we can to make this a one-take show. So if technical problems happen, then I don't
know. Keep rocking.
Yeah, just keep on pushing. So we've got... Well, I'll save the newsy kind of thing for after curveball because I want to corner you, Rob, because I think cornering you is what usually gets your brain working the hardest. Is when we did this exercise a while back where I just started throwing random words at you and you had to try to develop a topic out of the word. Remember that?
I do.
And you know, that's what you call warm up. It's like doing your stretches before you get into an exercise regimen. So I'm going to pin you down and say, curveball, you know, what changed in your life recently? You've had some changes going on. You've had some rough weeks. You've been working some late nights. You got this fancy new piece of technology that I'm sure you've been itching to get at every night when you're busy doing work for somebody else.
Mm-hmm. What changed in my life recently? Well, I mean, it depends on what time frame you're talking about. Let's see. Very likely I am totally a candidate for midlife crisis. No. Or maybe, I don't know, because I've been really wound up about making sure I, you know, live up to all the different things I have going on regarding, you know, family and day job kind of stuff. But then making sure it's like all that stuff that I'm really passionate about and I want to bring into fruition to figure out how do I, you know, find my creative voice and make a service out of it and, you know, find a sustainable existence with that kind of voice. And realize, you know, and being kind of a harsh judge of myself and thinking, well, how can I do better at this? And then having a month where, you know, I've made some good progress toward some of those things. Not necessarily, you know, being super splashdown successful on the business end of it, but being able to finish the darn projects is certainly an important step. So,
Do you think, here's my curveball.
What is it?
Do you think that, just before we started recording, I was bringing up The Karate Kid because it's part of our, it's our mantra that we say, you know, a few lines from the show or the movies before we start a show, for whatever reason. Read into whatever you want out of that. But the ending of that movie, the first one, pretty potent stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. Get choked up still.
Yeah. Is that a nice story, or is that something that is achievable, that moment? Is it poetry, or is it life? There's my curveball.
Is it poetry, or is it life? So what I'm hearing is, like my paraphrasing, if I'm understanding you, is that kind of moment really achievable, right? Mm-hmm. Or is it one of those things that we're just torturing ourselves with, where, you know, we have a certain ideal in mind that is really just kind of this interesting, exciting, titillating distortion of reality.
I'm going to throw some caltrops on the road in front of you too, just to make this interesting. Is refuting that idea itself a form of nihilism? To say, well, that's just a movie. You can't have that, so don't even try for that.
Is it nihilism? While I'm not an expert on nihilism, I don't feel like
curveball unlocked.
Yeah, totally. So we get used to like our own map of how we, you know, go about our lives day to day, but like you can have a belief that would tell you that that isn't accurate, but I wouldn't think that makes you a nihilist, right, necessarily. I mean, I think you could just be kind of unfamiliar with that situation, and I think one of the things that can one of the things I have wrestled with regarding, you know, something I've characterized as perfectionism or what have you, is if you think of something that you want to accomplish, and part of why you're not accomplishing it isn't because you can't conceive of it, but it's more of why you're just not quite believing it for some reason. I think that there's many levels before you're a nihilist, where you just may be kind of caught in wrestling with that concept more than and refining your map and how do you process and deal with those things, like trying to find that kind of victory, right? Because one of the reasons, I think there's two different victories in that moment, where you've got, there's more than that, actually, because you've got Daniel-san, you've got Johnny, and you've got Mr. Miyagi, all three of them having a huge victory at that moment, where Mr. Miyagi he's having the facilitator experience, where he's like, I'm incredibly satisfied I am so happy through you, what you've experienced.
That's a
whether
lovely
or not,
way to put it, Rob. That is a lovely way to put it.
Well, cool. And that he has assisted and been a participant in that, but it's not his. But then there's a secondary aspect of it that is his, where, I mean, he's really proud and satisfied, and that's a wonderful thing. But then Daniel-san obviously overcame a lot, because he was fairly oblivious as far as really figuring out how he could bring about his own change, right? And then Johnny was gaining his own voice, and he was rebelling against his an oppressive master that was sort of giving him his own map and saying, you follow this, or, you know, you really suck, Johnny, if you don't follow this.
Guruism.
And what's that?
Guruism.
Yeah, guru, very much like guruism. And the super negative aspect of it, too, because I think gurus don't have to wish super bad stuff on you. and right. want you to go kick people's legs out from under them, right. even when their leg is very injured. I think 8 out of 10 gurus agree that that's pretty mean.
Remember that part when Obi-Wan Kenobi told Luke to sweep the leg and then he said no mercy? Oh, that's why I hate Star Wars, man. That's why I don't like those movies. It's brutal.
Exactly. Obi-Wan's a harsh jerk of a teacher.
But to the question, yeah. Is this an achievable thing? Is this a viable thing, or is this a lovely story we tell ourselves?
I think it depends on where you are, right? And I think for people who feel that's something that they're willing to do and they can do and they can find it, even if it may be difficult, then yeah, you can do it. But I'm pretty sure that you do set yourself up if you're like, no, that's not possible. You know what I mean? But I still don't think that makes you a nihilist necessarily. So as far as the caltrops.
No, I don't either. I don't either. But because, yeah, there's like you pointed out, there's shades to that. There's a gradation between the different extremes of this. But, I just think about this and I think about how anytime I've ever had a moment where on paper I look pretty good, it never feels as good as I thought it was going to feel. And I've heard this from other friends of mine, too, who have had achievements, you know, because there's always something better or, you know, you expect the music to kick in, right? You know, you expect there to be just like that little bit of extra pizzazz to the moment.
Hold on, though. Like, this is the story aspect, right? Stories get to pick an ending.
Yeah.
Okay? That's the difference, is that... You don't close your book or whatever at that point and, you know, and then live Groundhog Day style back through it or whatever.
Oh, if only.
Yeah.
No, but, you know, what I'm trying to drive at here is, I'm so not trying to sound like, you know, like I'm going through my own midlife crisis, my own Wonder Years moment here, I try to remind myself that I'm not the best judge of recognizing when I'm achieving something that looks good on paper. So I'm trying to not be as attentive to that. And what I'm trying to be more attentive to is the things that are really moving, the little things, like when, I was just talking about this with Dave Roman, when a kid comes up to you, the kid who you taught, and they say something that sounds really smart that they claim you taught them. You know, years later, or when I was doing a signing at a comic shop and a kid who I hadn't seen in 6 years, who I taught in a class, came because he saw my name on the marquee of doing a signing there and he had to stop and say hi to me. And the kid was still drawing. And this was a kid who was not interested in comics before. And he was still interested in comics that day because I visited his class for 10 weeks when he was in fifth grade. And now the kid's a teenager, you know. Those are the things. Those are like the markers I'm trying to remember to pay attention to that says, yeah, you know, you're doing something that's kind of neat. This is sounding dangerously like Mr. Holland's Opus, and I don't want to go there because I've gone on record about how that movie terrified me. But
sorry for laughing at that.
But the bigger idea that I'm trying to drive at here is that something I've taken to remind myself of from time to time is I'm not always the best judge of when I'm hitting those thresholds, because they always feel a little different than I expected them to.
Well, I'll tell you one thing I'm horrible at is I enjoy those moments. I really do. Like I'll Mr. Miyagi myself, and then I'll feel like Daniel-san, and then I'll look back at myself. I'll be, I'll do the nod and the smile, and then I'll feel totally empty and have to go about some other new goal. Right away. Like yeah. It's a very fleeting feeling for me.
Yeah. That's the other thing too. It is. You don't get like, you know, a full week of being able to strut on the street or anything like that. So.
No, exactly. Well, I mean, cause there's things to do. Yeah. So one quick tack on for your curveball. Like let me see if I can, you know, if I have the arm strength to lob this back at you. So you brought up something that I've been thinking about a lot lately, which is sort of, perception blind spots and how we make our decisions and how we inform our process moving forward. And because reflection, the whole phrase, I don't know if this sounds nihilist of me, but like hindsight is 20/20 at best. That's optimal hindsight. That means like you actually have the tools to really dissect and perceive when you look back. Because if you still have the distorted whatever you had back at the time, you may not be seeing much more than you saw while you were going through it, right?
Right.
A blind spot. So I'm just wondering, like, do you have anything in your process, like, as far as how you are developing yourself creatively, like, where you seek out these blind spots, and then what do you do with them to work with them or work around them?
Oh man, that's totally what I'm going through right now as this year comes to a close, you know, because it is coming up on a time of reflection and evaluation. And rather than spend an undue amount of time patting myself on the back for the couple of good things that I did this year, it's time to look back at what I did actually accomplish. And, you know, one of the things that I'm using, and God, here I go. Take a drink, everybody. The Emergent Task Planner. I mean, that thing has been invaluable in tracking what I was actually doing, and I was taking care to be honest with myself with the Emergent Task Planner. And like, if I spent an hour doing something that was not on my schedule that perhaps was a waste of my time, track it. So I have something to go back and look at. So when I say, Project X, how come you're not done? Well, let's go through the Emergent Task Planner and look at all the times that I was supposed to be working on Project X. Did I allocate that time effectively? What got in the way? And also, that's one of the other things, is I'm tracking whenever something gets in the way, whenever like a fire comes in that I have to put out. The other one that I'm using as a procedure is Time Hop. You've heard of this, right?
Time what?
Time Hop?
No.
Time Hop is... It's an online service that you sign up for. You attach your social media accounts to it, and it will go back a year ago on that day and replay your social media day for you. You get an email. It says, here's your tweets, Instagrams, and Facebooks from this day last year, which is not as useful for like tracking projects or anything, but what it does do is it gives me a window into where my mind was 1 year ago. And how I was portraying myself 1 year ago. And you know what I discovered? I use a lot of exclamation points in my tweets and posts and things. And that's something I've become a lot more self-conscious about as a result of that. They all start with, hey, and then exclamation announcement. Here's the link, exclamation point. Whoa, calm down, dude. You know?
Well, I mean, that's one of the ways where we get energy into sentences, right? Is use the heck out of exclamation points, and you got the energy, man.
How else
do you transmit it?
But it's interesting to see it a year later, get like this reflective look on, like a colder reflective look at myself, right? It's like mm-hmm. It's as if it's coming in on somebody else's feed and just showing up in my inbox, and so I get to see afresh. And the nice thing is, it comes in first thing in the morning, it's when I'm having my coffee, I'm just trying to wake up, and I'm not quite into my dynamic self or whatever I am. And then all of a sudden, I see this, I'm like, who is this jerk? Oh, that's me, you know. So. So Time Hop and the Emergent Task Planner are the two things that have been really giving me a lot of interesting insights into who I've been and how the year's been going.
To me, that's a great approach, which is essentially you found ways to get fresh perspective through capturing and reflecting on some data, right? Mm-hmm. That is one way that I try to use to look at and address blind spots, and sometimes celebrate retroactively as well, right? Where once in a while, if I am on a tear of like, oh, I've got a productive summer or whatever, a month or two behind me, and maybe I'm not feeling so productive, mm-hmm. and then I do some kind of reflective phase of doing some planning, I can have a wait a minute moment and say, geez, dude, come on, like, nice, you know, this thing happened, that's really cool, you know.
Both are important. You do not want to be hair shirt guy. You know?
What? Did you? Oh, right. Okay. Hair shirt. Right.
We've talked about this before.
I remember now. Yep. Yeah. It's a self-punishment thing. I always think of just like really hairy guy. And it's just, he naturally has a shirt.
It does sound like Neckbeard, doesn't it? It's like, yeah. There's Neckbeard and his brother Hair Shirt. No, Hair Shirt actually has different origins.
Got it.
Well, we've got, speaking of curveballs, we got a response from a curveball a couple episodes ago. Are we ready to dive into that?
Yeah, please. Let's do that.
Yeah, we've been going kind of long with this one already, but I want to give full attention to all the, because this is like the curveball has sort of became a truncated version of what the show used to be, where we just wrestled with a really difficult and hard to answer question for an hour. But anyway, so we got, in episode 57, I think it was, we did a little bit of a curveball on the difference between rhythm and routine. When you're in a rhythm or when you're in a routine or a rut, right? And Leonard DeJusan of grayismanga.com sent us an email. Now, I want to say I'm not just reading her URL because she was kind enough to interact with our show, but also because it's a really, really beautiful manga, online manga. I bought the first volume of her book in printed form because I love looking at her art. I could look at it all day. So that's at grayismanga.com.
Awesome.
So D writes to us and says, how are you regarding your curveball in the recent episode? I guess how you break things in a day time that makes the difference between a rhythm and a boring routine. It's like writing for me because I hate working strictly off a layout or a detailed plan. I find myself writing a general term to describe a scene, then leave the details of the setting, the gestures, and sometimes the speech to emerge as I draw spontaneously. So there we go. She's creating a plan, but then she's leaving room for spontaneity in there to keep it interesting for herself. So for a schedule, this is her talking again. So for a schedule, I just decide on a break time without picking what to do exactly, or decide on a reading time without picking a specific book. Other times, I just schedule my time as I work, especially when I had previously estimated the time and effort for a task to realize I'd over or underestimated. How many times have we found ourselves there, Rob?
A lot.
So in this case, I go, after I finish this task, I'll take a break, or I'll work on that other task. This sounds a lot like what Ryan Estrada and I were talking about last episode, right? Using distractions to keep yourself motivated.
Mm-hmm.
And so she concludes by saying, I guess a rhythm is more flexible and more like a free dance than a routine. Even the definitions tell the basic difference. Routine is repeated, unvarying, unimaginative, when rhythm is regulated just like a routine, but with high and low points and elements.
Rhythm implies contrast. Feeling good about rhythm implies contrast and some kind of ebb and flow to it. Neat.
So there you go. From Alina, from DeJusan. Thank you very much, Dee. And so I think she put a cap on that one.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was a great response to the curveball.
And
thank
so,
you, Dee.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. And this is where I can put out a call to anybody else who's listening or watching this. If you guys have a response to a past curveball that we've thrown out on the show, or if you've got one that you want to throw at us, you can email us at leanintoart@gmail.com, or you can even record one and send it as an MP3 and we can play it on the air. So, yeah, once again, that's leanintoart@gmail.com. And then we've got one more piece of news before we kick into the main topic.
One quick thing, Jersey. Yeah. In the comments, Ryan Estrada shares that regarding the exclamation point, right? So, you know, hey, Jersey, an exclamation mark should be your logo. Don't fight it. Of course, appropriately ending that with an exclamation mark.
That was my Obi-Wan Kenobi ghost popping up as I was freezing in the snow. Don't fight Ryan. That's the other thing. Don't fight Ryan Estrada of RyanEstrada.com. We had one more thing that we need to make some noise about before we kick into the main topic, and then I swear to God we're going to get the main topic, and that is, we usually say this for the back end of the show, but we got a thing. We're doing a thing. We're doing an event. We got a special celebration going on. Tis the season, Rob. NaNoWriMo. 30 characters challenge is upon us. You just finished 24-hour comic day, which we're going to talk about in a minute here. This is the time of year where creative people do unholy things to themselves creatively in order to find out what the limits of their imaginations and their personal lives and sleep debts are. And so in order to properly celebrate this season of self-torture, we're doing a thing at leanintoart.com. What are we doing, Rob?
Well, we're doing a thing that we're calling Lean Into Art Season of Creative Challenges. And essentially, we're trying to make it easier to keep you fueled and excited and informed and challenged in different ways by having essentially a huge sale on almost all of our workshops.
Yeah, almost all of them are $10.
Yep. So. And the ones that aren't $10, they're essentially $10 per session, if you will, or $10 per roughly hour. So yeah. there's a couple that are 40, but they're huge. Like Jersey has an entire getting started with comics course that what's that one called, Jersey?
Comics Fundamentals.
A soup to nuts
approach to getting started making comics. How to think about world building, character building, and then what materials I use, and then ruminating on what other materials one could use. Leading you all the way up to getting a printed book or a PDF comic or a web comic going and evaluating what options are out there. And it's as much designed to get you thinking really hard about what choices you have as much as it is about teaching you the way I do it, right? I would say it's even more about teaching you to think hard about what choices you have and then using myself as a test case of here's one way of thinking about it, but here's a whole bunch of other ways of thinking about it.
Yeah, and I've seen students go through this class and produce some really awesome work as a result. I mean, their hard work, and also by they seem to be rather excited and bolstered by going through those 4 weeks with your class. Which, if you wanted, you could do it all in one day because it's downloadable, downloadable video and audio.
No DRM. You can download it as often as you like. And and there's a whole bunch like coloring in Adobe Photoshop elements, Absolute Constants is not part of that. Sequences and Consequences, Making Video Games from Comics with Rob Stenzinger, The Dramaturgy of Silly with Kim Holm, Foundations of Dynamic Line Work with Brandon Dayton, one of our more popular workshops, all $10. And then if with any purchase, you get 12 hours of bonus content.
Gosh, and we could go through them all. I think over the couple of weeks, we'll be mentioning them. Yeah. But an excellent one that so Jersey or I will sit in on the recording while a teacher, an instructor, puts on a class, right? And these are recordings of that experience, which they'll go through presentation and do live demonstration. Like the one I was thinking of mentioning also was an introduction to the super rad world of color
with Kevin Cross.
And that was a ton of fun and just really useful thinking of maybe you're thinking of doing the illustration or comics, but maybe with line work as not as high of a priority as the juxtaposition of color ranges and whatnot. You want to do a more painterly style, and that's an awesome introduction to color theory.
Yep. So week after week, we've always made a mention of leanintoart.com/workshops as the way that you can, support our efforts. And now we've just made it dirt cheap to do so. And so if you're looking for something fun and informative and, I'll say the word inspiring to listen to while you're working on these art challenges, you can go to the workshops page, and then you can just buy one workshop for $10, and then you get 12 more hours of stuff from our Creative Topics Variety Pack. And that is, it's not 12 hours of bonus content of me and Rob just talking. There's some really, really deep stuff in there.
Yeah, the Creative Topics Variety Pack, and also the keynotes for 30 classes in 30 days, which was, speaking of creative challenges, that was pretty fun, but it was crazy. So we're not actually doing that this year, but you could actually run your own. I mean, if you were so inclined, it would add up a little bit if you bought enough to run 30 hours of class, but overall pretty darn good value compared to other different educational online things that you could purchase and whatnot. So, but yeah, 30 classes in 30 days. We did that last year in November, and that was a lot of fun, but instead of that, we're doing this special event.
Yep. Okay. Well, we'll make another mention of it at the end of the episode. Right. But with that said, I think it's time to hit the main topic with what time we have left. We got it.
Yeah.
We're about 30 minutes in, but we can take this on quick.
Oh, yeah.
Quick, fast, and hard. We might stay up 1,000 feet for this one.
You know, maybe I'm going to sweep the leg. Maybe.
So, you know, Rob, okay, first of all, topic. Finishing things, designing things to be finished, workflow strategies to ensure finishing, knowing when it's time to do some triage or time to reconfigure your strategy, refigure your project plan. When is it time to rethink what you're doing? And we've got an email from a listener to respond to on this. But before we go into that, I want to talk with you about... Now, you chuckled when I said this earlier before we started recording, but I meant it. You just went through the cartoonist version of the Iron Man challenge of finishing. It's you finish or you don't finish. That's it. Those are the only two options at 24-hour comic day.
It's... One could come up with a strong argument for Star Wars based metaphors and references could be given a little rest, but I could not help it. Like it's in Empire Strikes Back when Luke goes into the swamp, he faces some demons and, you know, and he has a conceptual conflict with Darth Vader right there. And it's his own dark nature that he was dealing with. And one of the awesome things about 24-hour comic day is you get to do that for yourself, to yourself. you don't even have to visit a swamp.
But it still feels like cutting your own head off.
Yeah, exactly. Only one of your natures will survive. No, it really is this weird thing where... you know, setting a personal goal and you're competing against yourself. I imagine maybe some comic communities do it as a group competition. That could be interesting, I guess. I think it's really easy to look at the task of like, okay, I'm going to make 24 pages in 24 hours, right? 24 hours is a long time, right? But 24 hours straight is a different matter.
Well, and when you do the math and you really break it down, like Scott McCloud, who came up with the 24-hour comic, broke it down to say, like, well, let's say on average you've got 6 panels a page, 24 mm-hmm. pages, 24 hours, hour a page, 6 panels a page, 10 minutes a panel, right? Suddenly, that math becomes a lot more daunting when you think about, like, yep. I've only got 10 minutes to do each panel in this story. Yowza.
Oh, yeah. I mean, much less, and it all depends on your work style too, because you may work moment by moment, panel by panel, literally writing the story as you go along, and maybe you have some idea where you're going, but you're connecting the moments and inventing the moments, step by step in a progression, you know, other process things aside, because, well, maybe you're doing, like, you actually want to figure out a character design quick, or maybe you want to figure out, write a story. These things take up time. Eating takes up time. Going to the restroom takes up time. Yes. Those 24 hours don't quite all get funneled into your comic. And plus, being a social, kind human being takes up time. Because if you go to like a public event, which is so awesome that like on 24-hour comic day, there's places all over the world where there's venues where you can participate with your, and which for me, this was how I actually started to get to know some of the local Minneapolis, St. Paul area comic artists. It was saying, oh, okay, I guess, you know, I'm going to go this 24-hour comic day, and all of a sudden... there's a bunch of other artists.
That's awesome.
Which is nice. But then if you're going to actually say hi or introduce yourself or check out what anyone else is doing. You're
ticking off minutes that could be used for drawing.
Yep. So fast. It just goes by.
So any stories, reflections, observations from undergoing this experience? I imagine that Monday was really hard to go back to work.
Well, that's like saying, you know, oh, I went and I got to, you know, see a bunch of people that I like, and it was so, and we did a bunch of things that I love to do, and it was great and satisfying at so many different levels. But then, you know, I also need to go pay the bills, kind of thing, right? Where, I mean, thankfully,
well, I just mean like the whole sleep cycle thing getting thrown out of whack.
Oh yeah,
as well, as a guy who desperately loves a good night's sleep.
Now for me, I actually I finished this time. Like so, I've done it 3 years in a row. First year I finished. Thanks.
Congratulations. And, that is awesome.
But it was down to the wire for the first year. I made a story called, what was it called? Just Metal or the Girl. And it was just based, it was about, you know, two characters in my story where it was the first time one of the characters had a crush on a girl and was having a hard time with their bands and all this, making other good choices and whatnot. It was crazy because at first, because here's the trick. It's like, okay, subtract all that extra time, call it operational time that you're just taking away from those 24 hours. And now all you have, now you have the raw, whatever's left over from your socializing and eating and all that. Those are your minutes to write and get a comic done. A lot of drawing. I mean, all the logistics of, you know, finishing pages, whatever you're doing, physical medium, digital, whatever. That's all you got left. And so now the tax, so that's the territory you have to cover, what's remaining. What are you going to fill it up with? Are you going to say, well, I'm going to do perfect perspective on crowds and have lots of bicycles, right? And perhaps a biplane who's a main character and whatever. And you just like think of all this mechanical and like there's horses and dragons and I'm going to make it all realistic. Anyway,
I'm going to populate this with everything that I find difficult to draw. I mean, you don't even have to say anything specific, right? It's like things that I feel uncomfortable drawing. I'm going to throw all that stuff into this. And then it's a real creative challenge.
Exactly. Or you could be like, I'm going to learn manga studio. Watch me go. I have used this for a couple minutes before. Now I'm going to use it today.
Yeah.
All day. So yeah, I didn't finish that time. That was me, by the way, the last thing on the end, for the record. But,
sometimes you're a real Fozzie Bear, the way we knew that that was you, but you still felt the desire, the need to tell us, oh, by the way, that was, yeah, we knew, Rob, we knew that was you.
All right. Well, good. We're all on the same page. So, yeah. So, okay. So I'm familiar now. It's like, what are you filling up those pages with is really critical. The amount of panels, all that kind of stuff, the difficulty, the techniques, it all adds up. Yeah. And so, did you have something to add?
No, I'm just agreeing.
I can rest for a second.
I'm emphatically supporting your points.
So the other thing that I love about when it's a social thing is, well, you get to see what happens to people when they don't sleep, which is fun. You can be inspired and say like, wow, all of a sudden this special character just showed up in my comic because, you know, someone's getting loopy and dancing and stuff. because it's, you know, it's like 4 a.m. and they've, you know, been eating junk food all day and they're under this pressure cooker.
Yeah.
Let's see. So the filling it up, you're with other artists going through this plight at the same time. And what's interesting is, I would bet a lot of communities are going to be more supportive than not. Instead of saying like, where you at? Huh? Yeah. Oh, you only have page 5? You suck.
Send him over the body bag.
Exactly. Exactly. It's another Karate Kid reference. Oh my God. So you get to see other artists going through the same decision process, which I think is really interesting. Mm-hmm. And you get to see perhaps other people doing their own version of, hey, I'm going to do manga studio today. But for them, it could be something else, right? It could be, I'm going to use tons of spot blacks, and I'm going to make sure like every page is at the peak of my illustration capability, right? That tends to be its own form of the, you know, manga studio, where it will not help your productivity because, again, there's not that much time. 24 pages. So anyway, so you get to see other artists making their own decisions, and you can sort of reflect on them and, use that as you will. Because again, maybe you have a blind spot, you know, and I'm looking at me, right? Where maybe, one thing that I realized going into this year, having come out of, you know, succeeding then failing, is, what is this event for? What am I trying to get out of this? Is this about flexing my illustrative capabilities? Is this about storytelling? What is this for? I mean, it's a challenge where I can't get every possible thing I can imagine out of it. What do I want to get out of it? And one thing that I didn't value as much until later, was that succeeding felt awesome, for one, and for two, finishing a story felt wonderful. And it wasn't about me trying to create experience to say, like, look at all these battle scars I got. It was just, hey, I finished a thing, and now we can talk about that thing if you're interested. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's the part I want to capture again. So I actually this time focused on that and balancing out the whole, you know, I tried to keep my operational costs down enough without being a total jerk and not being social, right? I would argue maybe my needle pointed a little bit too far toward being antisocial this time, because I actually managed to finish by, 3 a.m.? So it started at 10 a.m. on Saturday, right? And I was done and published by 3 a.m. the following day.
So you came in 7 hours early.
Exactly. And then I went home and slept.
Nice. Oh, my gosh. So that really was you.
The best way to not get hit is don't be there. Karate Kid 2. You know, that lack of sleep does hurt. So honestly, when Monday came around, I didn't pay as high of a price, which I highly respect, and I think it's incredible the artists that did do that. And I've been there, and I've done that before, and I think it's awesome. But I thought, you know what? I've got some other stuff going on Monday. I want to be there for it. I want to be present. Uh-huh. I'm gonna do this. I'm going to defeat this thing faster than 24 hours. And finish.
There's so much in what you said there. I was furiously taking notes the whole time. God, there's a lot of stuff there. You know, the struggles that go into this thing. Let's face it, comics is not for the faint of heart. You know, if you are into instant gratification, get the heck away from comics. Run like hell and do not look back, because there's nothing there for you.
There's no marshmallow here.
I mean, I know, but even saying
I'm joking about that. There's a marshmallow.
Well, there is. You identified it actually just a minute ago. But you know, even saying it in my high pitched nasally wiener white guy voice, it still has a little too much of the air of only real men need to apply. Tough guys only. That's not what I mean. But it's easy to misconstrue or to romanticize this creative process as being something for only the truly faithful, the ones who really want those scars on their backs and with that kind of Klingon-esque kind of braggadocio kind of thing. And that's part of it. That's there. I acknowledge it. I've participated in that kind of nonsense. But
it's not bad to feel tough sometimes.
No, it's not bad to feel tough. It's not, well, let me put it this way. It's not bad to feel competent. It's not bad to feel like whatever goes down in a few seconds here, I can handle this. I'm a big boy, yeah. You know? there's a difference between feeling competent and tough, in my opinion. But
and there's lots of tough women too. Like by like the Minneapolis Minneapolis Center for Book Arts had a bunch of women there, who many of them were still working on their comics when I headed out. So they were kicking butt.
Yeah, but you know, it's there's gosh, and this is people are gonna be like, oh, here, take another drink. It's easy to talk about mini comics again. But finishing a thing is so powerful. Cap'n Cat. I'm gonna talk about Cap'n Cat again.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Ann and I belted out that book. Ann and I cranked out that book in like a week and a half, 2 weeks, something like that. And it really was just this simple little story where we didn't overthink it. It's more important to have a new thing and for it to be fun than for it to be this magnificent award-winning work of art. And who knows, maybe by having fun, we'll make something that's actually, you know, worth talking about. But regardless, we threw all of that kind of thinking out the window and said, let's just get this damn thing done. And when we finished stapling those books, you know, 8-page black and white mini comic, you know, not that much to it. 2-pass screen colored cover, screen printed cover, and we intentionally kept the design simple in order to. And by the way, Rob, one's in the mail to you right now. We intentionally.
Oh, God, you could sense this ache in my heart, couldn't you? Because like I seriously want to copy that thing.
But anyway, it's not anything that's technically profoundly like a threshold moment in my life. But when we stapled that last cover and then Ann took out the bone folder and folded that last cover, that feels really good. That is a huge psychological rush that you get upon finishing a thing and publishing a thing. And this is why I beat on this time and time again. If you have trouble finishing something, make a GD mini comic, because that will get you into that cycle and being able to, and like 24-hour comic day, and this is the thing I want to pick at, and I want to get to this email, is it's a microcosm. 24-hour comic day is a microcosm of the entire thing. And one of the reasons I think that mini comics are so compelling as a starter project is because, and seems like I talked about this very, very recently. Stop me if I mentioned this last episode, Rob, but you know, you get to page 4 in a mini comic story, and that's the part where I say, oh my God, I'm a hack, I'm no good, I'm a fraud, I'm a fake, I'm a phony, I have no business doing this thing. And then you push on to page 5, and then suddenly you get to page 6, and you're like, okay, it's almost done. I'm starting to feel better. You get to page 7. Hey, this is actually kind of stringing itself together, okay? It's not terrible at any rate. You get to page 8. The relief of being done. Oh, thank God, I'm done. And then you look at it. Hey, it's not too bad. It looks like a thing. It looks like a story. It looks like something it's supposed to be. And then lather, rinse, repeat, right? But when you do a graphic novel, when you do something that's like 45 years long, you're going to go through that cycle every 4 pages. That's a lot of opportunities to get disheartened and want to quit. Whereas a mini comic, you can get into that emotional cycle. You get in and out of it really quick, and you can train yourself for the big tournament where you're going to have to fight against the Cobra Kai. You got to stay on the floor first.
Exactly. There's a certain catch, I don't know, some kind of... it's a difficult cycle to break to get the experience. You have to find a way to gain the experience. Yeah. And having some severe constraints like a mini comic or an event like 24-hour comic day. So for instance, I mean, if you happen to be, maybe you have a whatever, you know, a job or a relationship, kid, whatever the heck. But like, if you're able to set up this just this one day, you can go test yourself and you can use that time fully isolated, dedicated to this one thing. Or mini comics are awesome in other ways because they typically involve being able to sleep more. But you've again taken on something that is that's bite-sized and you're able to get the full experience, not cheat yourself out of finishing. And so I'm almost like, I'm all kind of jumping into the email, aren't I?
Yeah. Actually, let's just go to the email. That's a great segue into it, because we've already started to address these points. So this comes from Brian Taylor of BrianHaroldTaylor.com. He actually sent this to me a while ago. And he says, hey, Jersey, I've been listening to you since 2009. Wow. That's like in internet years. That's a long time. decided to check out your comics again. And this is, by the way, anybody who sends me emails, this is the way to get me to read your email. Start by complimenting my work and not just my voice on my show, or criticizing my voice on my show, and then go into the thing you want me to respond to. Just today, I decided to check out your comics again. Love this new art style you're pursuing with the front. It's got a ton of appeal to it and it is a lot of fun to look at. By the way, thefront.me, everybody. Or sugarycereals.com. Mm. So he goes on to say, I've been working on my graphic novel on and off now for over 3 years. Again, internet time, long time. Though events repeatedly have caused me to put the book on hold from time to time, school, job, marriage, I have seriously worked my butt off on this thing. And I looked at his pages. There's no question he's worked his butt off on this stuff. It's really great looking stuff. But after 3 years, I only have 53 pages full color completed because this has taken me so long to complete due to other obligations. I've become a bit burnt out. In addition, my art style has somehow completely changed to the point that it doesn't even resemble the original. He says, as crazy as it sounds, at this point, I'm actually considering starting over, thumbnailing the entire book first before doing any finished art, then setting a deadline, and then making it a project that I can actually finish, 80 to 100 pages rather than the 200 plus I was originally going to do in 2009. Also, I think I'll find a colorist this time around, which could speed things up a ton. So he finally concludes with, if you get a second at some point, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts about starting something you can actually finish and also about knowing when you should move on or rethink a plan. Definitely appreciate any advice you'd be able to offer. So, yeah, that comes from Brian Taylor of BrianHaroldTaylor.com. We will link to him in the show notes. And we already kind of started dealing with this, right? And I don't want to just sum it up with just like, make a mini comic, dude. Shut up. Google it, you know? It's complicated.
Show over. What do you mean?
it's complicated because mini comic is not a panacea here. And obviously, I mean, if you look at Brian's website, the guy's got skills. He doesn't need training. He's got pro looking stuff. But the trick is, when do you know to cut your losses and try something else? How do you redirect that energy when you're feeling burnt out on something? I mean, something Ryan Estrada said last week, I think, is great food for thought, is when he talks about how he'll have like six projects going on at once, and then when one's feeling a little unappealing to him or he doesn't know what to do with it, he'll just work on the other one for a little while, which I think is a great idea. If you don't mind the slow burn to getting things done. And so, like Ryan pointed out, he's had projects that he's been a slow burn on for years and years and years, as have I.
And me as well. Wow, this is a really good looking book. Sorry, I'm just checking out Brian's book.
Yeah, it's very pretty. He's got good stuff. But this just goes to show that no matter where you are skill wise, this is an inescapable part of the process, is feeling burnt out, feeling disheartened, or feeling like, God, I just want the darn thing to be done. I just want the darn thing to be done. You know, even when I was doing, I'm going to talk about it, that graphic novel I did years ago, when I was serializing it online, it was, as I've pointed out many times, 2 years of thumbnailing the book on my lunch hours, because that's the only time I had to work on it, and then 3 years of drawing the book. That's 5 years total of me not seeing this thing done and in print. So I did little things on the side. I did short stories on the side, with friends. I teamed up with friends on things in order to like share the load on that. And that was to have that psychological cycle of having something finished to remind me of why I'm doing this thing. It sounds, I don't know if this sounds too much like engineering ourselves. And that's going to turn some people off because we're human creatures after all. But one of the things that you said earlier, Rob, before we started recording, was you talked about are you going to set up a finishing machine or a failure machine, right? I thought that was a lovely way of putting it. And by saying machine, I'm not talking about us as machines. We're talking about the system we put in place. Are we setting up a failure machine or a finishing machine? And how do we know if we're in a failure machine? Some people can't tell, and some people can. You highlighted this yourself by talking about, hey, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to take on these six really robust art challenges in the really, really tiny constraints of this weekend drawing exercise. I would call that adding elements of failure into the machine, yeah?
Oh yeah. And it's honestly that it's possible to do some of that. But it's important to have some enough perspectives to say, okay, this is enough of a challenge. These goals are compatible enough where I think I can work this out, right? Versus saying, you know, having some kind of perspective on it, which is a bit of, there's a bit of machine-esque, I guess, feeling in being an intentional artist, right? Or when you're intentionally designing versus when you're purely expressing. And they don't have to, you know, completely live in separate houses either. You can go back and forth, right? Because I don't think I could make it through. Like, I planned out my story on 24-hour comic day, but I still played around with things. I had no idea how many panels were going to be on each page and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And lots of surprise within the framework of saying, I know I'm going to go through this story.
Yeah, actually early on. Well, not early on, but like partway through the process, you posted your outline on Google Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, here's some concept sketches. Here's some of the high points and low points of the story in loose sketch form. And then here's like a page by page breakdown of what I plan on doing. So you had a framework there, right?
Yeah.
But let me give you the opposite experience. This year, I did Mini Comic Day in Ann Arbor at the Duderstadt Library on North Campus, hosted by Dave Carter, who's been on the Comics Are Great show many times. The guy who runs the video game library at University of Michigan, Rob. Video game library. I'm taking you there next time you're in town.
I know. I heard about this place, but I didn't get to see it last time.
I know. I should have taken you there. I'm a jerk. I didn't take you there. But yeah, we have a video game library, and it's next.
Thanks for mentioning it, though.
Anyway, I short-circuited myself. I cheated myself out of the joy of finishing something by saying, well, let's also make this something that I could print and sell at comic shows, like as a mini comic with a screen printed cover, which there's nothing to say that you can't do that with an improvisational comic. But the moment I said that, I set a standard for myself, an implicit standard for myself that was impossible to complete. In mini comic day is 8 hours, an hour a page. You got an 8-page mini comic, you got 8 hours to do it. And I arrived late. You know, so I'm already cheating myself out of time. And then I say, oh, let's also just make this something that I would actually want to, you know, possibly run on the Sugary Cereals website or something. Boom. Automatic short circuit. You know you can't do that in 8 hours, jurors. What are you thinking? But I thought, I'm macho. I'm tough. I'm a real comics man. And I'll do this thing. And then, you know, 6 hours into it, I realized I've got 8 pages of roughs. But there's no way I'm finishing this thing. And what's more is in the 8 pages of roughs, I tried to do that thing that I always do or try to do with, I got to invent something in this story. I've got to do something on the page that only comics can do on top of all of that. Gosh. And I want this to take place in a sci-fi future city, and there's going to be lots of down shots looking down on the city. Idiot. I built a failure machine out of erector set bits right there in the Duderstadt Center.
One thing that's wonderful about that though is it's not like the failure machines are all they're not all bad, right? It's just I think the cautionary aspect of it is to not only build failure machines, because honestly, I learned a lot as far as whenever I've set myself up with too many goals on a certain project or whatever, and it didn't work out. Those can be really good learning experiences. And it's not just like saying, hey, no one asked me to dance, but you know, my mom said I'm pretty anyway or whatever. it's legitimately like there's like all your observations about that project right now are very interesting as far as being able to estimate future projects, being able to think about the next challenge. And I mean, I tell you, like for me, like I came back, I had the tiger when I was at 24-hour comic day. I was like, I'm taking it down. And I like, it's that's it. If it was pro wrestling, I would have been all chairs and, you know, doing the claw on the camera, you know? So anyway,
now we're getting mixed movie metaphors here.
Why not?
But
it's like
you're
macho
right.
Salad.
No, you're right. You're right. There was an enormous learning payoff in that failure of Mini Comic Day for me, which was now I know that when I say mini comic that I can print and sell, I have a very clear idea of what that means and what are the parameters with which I can complete that. So when Ann and I said, let's do this Cat and Cat mini comic, and I looked at the time frame, how much time do we got? I could make a better estimate of, okay, well, I know we can get the principal paper art done in this amount of time, which means I'm detecting 4 extra days there. I can do some really fancy toning in this book if I want to, right? And I'm going to bring an intern in to help make sure to ensure that that happens. It was easier for me to line things up so that I didn't have to pull an all-nighter before I left for the show. I still pulled some long nights, but it wasn't something, it was like you with your 24-hour comic day where I finished with enough time to get a decent night's sleep afterwards.
That is super cool.
So I learned that through, you know, as they say, the hard way. By having a big failure. Go ahead. You have a point.
There's like a nuance here that I think is worth looking at. A non-trivial complexity as far as doing a creative project and then having some kind of constraints, adding whatever embellishments you want that you think are going to be realistic enough that's still possible to win, right? Or to get the outcome you're looking for. Adding in the curve, the challenge or add additional aspect of a collaborator or a another person on the staff to have to fulfill a certain role in the production process.
Yeah.
So now you don't just wear the hat of the independent creator. All of a sudden you're collaborating in some way where you're handing off a task, you're communicating it, you're providing feedback, or you know there's some kind of handing off and handing on, right? And that's beyond what you would normally be doing if you were solo.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. It also helps create a feedback loop to prevent you from that whole, oh, I'm a hack, I'm a fraud part of the process. I mean, that still happens a little bit for me regardless. But when you've got some kind of a feedback loop with a person as it's coming together, right, then you also have that kind of sustainable boost of energy to keep punching to get through the end, right? Ideally, you'd find that all within yourself, but, you know, even Daniel had a Mr. Miyagi to egg him on.
Oh, that's true. He would have never got his bike fixed if it weren't for Mr. Miyagi either. So
we're just going to cover the whole movie.
That's true. Yep. Just have to work.
His bike fixed.
Nope.
The most touching part of the film. But I love this idea of also asking yourself, what do I want to get out of it? And being specific with responding to that, you know, being as specific as you can, being literal almost, and not just say like, to make a lot of people happy. That is a lovely thought. That is a great thought. I applaud people who just want to make people happy. But, you know, who? In what way? In what form? What are the dimensions of this thing going to be? What's the page count going to be? What are the production values going to be? Where are you going to get it printed? Things like that. What is the thing you want to hold in your hands when you're done with this thing? Well, I just want a web comic. I just want a PDF comic. Okay. You know, now we're getting someplace. And then you can start setting your finishing machine with the parameters in order to get you to that thing. Does that make sense that I say?
I think that makes a lot of sense, but I think you can do that in the beginning of the process, and you can do it any way along the process.
Good
so,
point.
Like, I think part of Brian's question had to do with the, when do you decide to wrap it up, right? Or when do you, do you walk away from it at some point? And for me, I think it can be worth evaluating that. It's I've seen many other creators walk away from a variety of projects that can be totally valid. One of the things I think of as a measuring point is like, is this thing too unencumbered or too encumbered, too burdened down with different constraints and concerns that I can't disconnect anymore, right? And then that can help inform me that, well, maybe that's a reason, a time to, you know, set it aside and pick on a new one. Or can it be redefined where it's at is success? And now I get an alternate use out of it. Maybe it's not my initial goal, but I've had things become portfolio pieces from that.
Yeah. And I mean, in the case of what he's talking about here, and to talk specifically about Brian's question, is he's got this 53 pages of material that he's not sure if he wants to continue on because his style changed and so on.
We know my answer for that one. I mean, just keep on changing and publishing.
You know, but that's just it, though. Keep on changing and publishing, because there's nothing worse in my mind than, you know, oh God, it reminds me of this notion of that we grow up and we become this locked in personality. And now I'm a grown up, and now I don't have to think hard about these decisions anymore. I'm just in command of myself, and everything just makes sense to me. And I'm just going to operate this way until retirement time, when science has shown us that this is not the case. The way our memories work, we are not who we were when necessarily. We are always, always changing. Brain plasticity, depending on the way you treat yourself and the way you use your mind, you are always, always, always changing. And your art should change as you go along. When you look at Peanuts, for crying out loud, look at the
1950s. Oh, yes. I was hoping you'd bring up that one. Yes.
You know, Peanuts changed a lot. So, yeah. My
oh, gosh. And The Simpsons, another one, right? So think about the early Simpsons and, you know, compared to
drawing style and even in the acting style. Listen to season one Homer versus season 22 Homer, right?
Oh, gosh, yeah. There's a ton of different creators going through their own development process, not just the visual aspect of it.
So
tons of things changed.
But before I get too preachy, I want to make it clear that, man, I went through the exact same sort of existential crisis when I started working on the new front story, which is updating on my website, which Brian referred to. I thought, is it okay for me to do this? You know, I've got this 197-page graphic novel where it's all in one style. It's in black and white. It's aimed at this kind of demographic. Can I do a kiddie version that ties into the exact same continuity or story world or whatever and get away with that? And I got a lot of different advice from a lot of different people. And then one of my best buddies, so I talked to him on the phone every week, he clearly was against it. But he said to me, he's like, yeah, but, you know, you seem to really like the idea and it's your book. So who's going to stop you? What am I going to stop you? Am I going to tell you you can't do that? What are you crazy? And so I did it. And then once I started doing it, I was like, well, of course I get to do this. And if somebody says, well, why does it look different when I look at the older one? Because it's older, you know, and I get to do that. And if you don't like it, here's the good news. You don't got to read it. You know, as long as this is interesting to me. You know, my family's income isn't resting on that book. There's other things that I'm doing where the livelihood of my family is more invested. I don't even know if that was a sentence, but you know what I mean. I make my money elsewhere, so this is the thing where I get to be playful and in engaged with it in a lighthearted way.
Well, okay, so let's say, excuse me, let's say that this is where your income is going to be coming from, and it is a big business move for you to be publishing a book. Well, you can, and you're concerned about somehow the character's evolution or change visually is going to be somehow disruptive. I think there'd be a lot of strategies that you could do to mitigate that. Like you could compartmentalize that, like, you try to find the major breaks in evolution or style. Hopefully they align with chapters or some portion of the story, and then publish that as a separate book, or create, you know, chapter dividing art sections, right? Where you get to remind people of the new look and maybe even, I don't know, show the new version of the characters with the old ones or whatever. I mean, but it shows like there's a, all these styles are, I don't know, part of the story, and you can give them some kind of context or a different feel instead of them just feeling like surprising or incongruent to an audience that maybe they would be concerned about that.
No, thank you for bringing this up. This is another thing that I think is worth mentioning to us, is that we are creative people. We are engaged with this thing to be creative, And this creativity should trickle down to everything that we do, all the decisions that we make in this stuff. Now, one of the things we've talked about in this episode extensively is limitations and how these limitations can be leveraged to produce really interesting and surprising and spontaneous things. And I think about a conversation, going back to my friend who told me that, you know, to just do what I want with my story because it's mine. A conversation that he and I have had for years is he's a continuity guy. He's the guy who reads comic books, and he wants there to be a consistent, cohesive continuity that can be tracked and measured and timelined. And whenever they do these continuity reboots in these superhero comics, he gets really frustrated because, oh, now it's all this information changed. Batman wasn't born at this time. He was born at this time, and so on. I'm the anti-continuity guy. I'm like, look, as long as it's a good Batman story, I don't give a damn when it took place. As long as, just make it good. Just make it a fun, interesting read that's easy for me to dip in and dip out so I don't have to read 55 issues of study material in order to understand and fully appreciate the story. Now, where the two of us come together and agree is that a good writer, a talented writer, can work with the limitations of a long continuity and write a really good story that doesn't violate anything that came before, and yet still takes the character into interesting new directions while still resets the character the way continuity sort of demands that things to be sometimes. Go into bold new directions with the character, exploratory directions with the character, and yet still have it work within existing continuity and within existing direction of the company's universe, as it were. Where am I going with this? A talented creator, a creative thinker, can say, how can I experiment within the parameters of the thing that's already successful for me? How can I find new ways to be experimental and keep this thing interesting to me while still retaining what previously or is continuing to provide monetary value for me? If you can, does that make sense?
Yeah.
If you can have 23 seasons of The Simpsons and it's still, I mean, they have some stinkers, but for my money, it's still just as good a show today as it was 15 years ago. You know, within those limitations, you could do some pretty interesting stuff. You don't have to just kind of break the whole vessel in order to do something interesting and new with it. And it might even be sometimes that you just need to walk away from it for a little while and then come back to it and look at it again and see with fresh eyes.
Well, yeah, because there's different things that you are trying to manage with sharing your story. Well, you need to, well, tell the story, of course, but then at some point you're going to package it up and you're going to present it to an audience. And how you package it, how you present it, how you distribute it, these are other aspects of the experience of consuming your story that you can throw your creativity into. So let's see, you don't need to use this. There's a bajillion ways to do it. And I'm not saying this was overly that creative, but one way where I managed that concern in volume one of Art Geek Zoo, The Way of Sound, which is, let's see, I finished that book in like whatever, July of 2010. But it represents four chapters plus bonus material. And what I did was in between chapters, I gave sort of a bit of an intro and I created the, you know, essentially like intro pages, right? And also I made little bonus content sections after each chapter. So there was a way to sort of transition across these different styles that more or less mapped to chapters. So and I tried to add some value to that experience, a little bit of behind the scenes stuff, and essentially imply that part of this is the journey of the characters. And the other part, it's my journey. You're seeing me evolve by seeing this book evolve.
Yep. Agreed. So I think we dug around this one pretty good today, Rob. I feel pretty good about it. I think I got a little preachy there for a second, but that's actually something that I should save as a reflection for another time. I don't think we're going to have any on-the-ground stuff. I didn't have anything written down anyway for on-the-ground stuff. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, I don't want to tell people, here's some tools and resources for finishing stuff. This is more of an abstract one, a thinking one, right? Where
I would argue, though, that thinking and thinking tools can be on the ground. And I know, yay, abstract man, watch me go. But like, that is thinking tools. They're very helpful. So I think we were in between both realms often in this conversation. So
yeah,
nothing quite so as tangible as a, you know, here's a specific thing to, you know, do or download or whatever, but
right.
Good food for thought.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we wandered around it from both angles in a way that it feels as complete as we're going to get this week for me. So thank you, Brian Taylor. Oh, were you say something, Rob?
Oh, no. I thought I'm jumping the gun. Was I sensing a bookend sound effect that would start in our next section?
Oh, yes. I wanted to thank Brian Taylor of BrianHaroldTaylor.com for the thought-provoking email. That was very, very cool. So yes, then we got to close out, which means time to reflect on our week. And gosh, I hope your week was not as dreadful as that music implies.
It had a lot of secret mission aspects of it too. But anyway, no. We also have to refer to Robotech, but all right. And I was picturing the secret mission where the Zentradi aliens sneak aboard the SDF-1, but then all of a sudden there's, you know, actual attacks going on. So then they're caught in the midst of the war. And anyway.
And you have three poor micronized Zentradi trying to pilot a Zentradi battle pod in the middle of a firefight. Yeah.
Takeaways, Jersey.
Takeaways.
So I'm curious, do you happen to have a takeaway for us? Some kind of bit of creative gold that you discovered?
Yeah. Well, for me, you know, we talked a little bit about at the top of this one, like the emergent task planner and being able to try to evaluate your, you know, how what you've been doing and when things, learning experiences that we achieve through failures. One of the things that I discovered is, and gosh, it's funny how these things happen. You say something about yourself in a joking capacity or in mixed company or in an anecdotal sense, and you know it to be true, but you don't really internalize that wisdom, that self-knowledge sometimes until a crisis occurs. And one of the things is, upon going back over my emergent task planner and looking at my past year and holding up to what were my goals, what did I accomplish, what didn't I accomplish, what were the serendipitous things, what were the parts that were, you know, right, I tripped at the finish line kind of stuff. And I realized that I had an issue with, keeping all the plates on the platter when on paper it looked like something I could keep on the platter, right? And I remembered that a joke I often make when I'm at meetings and I'm talking with people is I break out my phone or my tablet and I start jotting down, even when they suggest, like, here's three optional dates for a meeting, I have to enter them into my calendar right away, even if they are just optional. Oh, I remember how this came up. I was scheduled to do a workshop someplace, and it was on my calendar twice. It was on, like, the week of the 19th and the week of the 26th or whatever. You know, it was, like, the same day, but just two different dates. And I had to confer with the person who hired me to do the workshop. I'm like, was I doing it on the 19th or the 26th or whatever? And they're like, duh, 26th, look at our email correspondence. And I was like, oh, well, then why do I have it on the 19th? And I realized that it, because at the time when we were discussing prospective dates, those were two dates I entered both on there just so I wouldn't schedule something else in there. Because as I said in the meeting, as I've joked around with people, if it's not in my calendar, it vanishes. I will not remember it if I do not enter it on my calendar so that my phone and my tablet buzz and say, hey, you got a thing next week. Hey, you got a thing tomorrow. It alerts me a week ahead of time and the day ahead of time. So I've known this for some time, and I've joked around about it a lot. Why the hell was I not using my Google Calendar to schedule the tasks that I want to complete on a weekly basis? Why was I not saying, here's what you're making for dinner on my calendar? Here's the hours you're going to work, and these are the things you're going to work on that night. Why was I not entering those in the calendar so that my thing buzzes to say, you know, here's the thing you're working on tonight? Which sounds kind of sad, right? It's like, oh, poor Jers, what's wrong with his brain where he can't remember these things? But you know what? It's when you're juggling a lot of projects, at least for me, it's easy to sit down at the desk and go, okay, what was I going to do again? And I can flip on my open my emergent task planner, but I've got 20 items that are in the to-do list there, and I don't have them prioritized. By putting them on the digital calendar and having it send alerts to me, not only is it prioritized, it's also assigned to a specific date and time, just like a work schedule. Doy, you know, what a stroke of brilliance that was. Hey, guess what, kids? If you get up in the morning and work all day, stuff gets done. That's about the level of brilliance that I've achieved with this. But it was a self-learning moment.
Everyone's got different learning styles or whatnot. I almost feel like we have, I think it's a big topic. I think we could revisit it at some point. Looking at, a fresh take on how we're tackling our day-to-day, to-do process and working on projects.
We definitely need to do this in December, right?
All right.
A year-end review kind of thing.
Cool. Cause that'd be good. I've been doing a bit of experimenting as usual with that, evolving techniques and all that. I don't have to, dump it all out right now, yeah, it's ever changing. I've been debating what to, cause I've got kind of two takeaways. I'm trying to think of like which one, cause I don't know if
pick one because we're closing in on that dreadful hour and a half mark where Google Plus Hangouts start acting weird.
I'm just gonna give Samsung the high five for the for the good old Galaxy Note 10.1 because I actually I used it to do my 24-hour comic pen stage.
Sweet.
So yeah, I needed that immersive learning experience to see how it would work, and I knew. It may sound pretty similar to saying, I'm going to make a comic in Manga Studio, but the applications and the workflow are far closer to just a basic pen and paper process. So,
what did you wind up using?
I wound up using, it's the app you recognize.
Layer Paint?
Layer Paint, yep.
Yeah, because Layer Paint is very similar to Photoshop in the way it behaves, so it doesn't seem like there's going to be a huge learning curve there.
Exactly. I mean, there's a little bit of learning curve, figuring out a good workflow for the, the layers and importing images and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I figured out today how to import images into Sketchbook Pro. Mm-hmm. So I would have possibly gone with that because I've been a user of Sketchbook Pro and its various forms for years. So I might have gone with that instead. But I guess the takeaway is that. I do like to, get as much as I can out of that time when I do a creative challenge, right? So I'm like, I'm taking 24 hours, I'm dedicating it, theoretically 24. It didn't take me the full 24, but that was the plan. And I want to get the most out of it, but I also want this to be possible. So anyway, my approach for that was, doing it all on my new Samsung Galaxy Note 10.1. And thankfully
crash
it worked out.
Crash course in determining whether or not you want to keep that thing, huh?
Yeah. No, it replaced my modbook. So one way or another, we're going to get along. We are stranded on this island together. And thankfully it turned out to be a good companion.
Good. The only complaint I have about the thing is the plastic housing on the back just feels a little flimsy, and I feel compelled to keep it in the case as a result of that. And there aren't that many cases on the market for it, so I wish I could find something a little bit, because when it's out of the case, it is so thin and light, it just feels great in the hand except for that flimsy plastic back.
Yeah, I got one of those cases that has like this kind of thing on it.
Oh, yeah, the hand grippy thing, yeah.
Yep, so I dig that.
Mine's a big foldy one, which adds a ton of heft to the book. I mean,
yeah, and those are super protective.
Yeah, it's got a nice hard back to it.
Yep.
That's why I got it. But it makes the thing so bulky by comparison to what it really is.
True. Always trade-offs with that. But and it's always a risk with picking a new tool and whatnot. But it was neat to know that. it's not like I had one bad experience with doing something like that and then I just shied away from it. It felt good to just fine tune it and still be a little bit a little bit wild as far as you know, because I could have just gone straight to inks on the paper that I, because I did all those rough pencils, which they are very rough pencils, on essentially what is it 4 1/4 by 5 1/2, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just 8 1/2 by 11 Hold standard U.S. Printing paper, and just cut into four, which is
No, I mean, I like how that was kind of a theme today, was this idea of resource allocation and allocating your resources based on what you want to get out of the thing, and then leaving a little bit of room for spontaneity and experimentation. So, you know, try to get all things being equal with a little bit of leftover to spare for being playful, right?
Yeah. That would be a great thing to address when we go through some planning and reflection and how do we manage that stuff. Because, yeah, I mean, just you don't want making comics, no offense to anyone who works at McDonald's, but working at McDonald's, like, they have a highly industrial, beep-oriented process that they don't want you to worry about which beep is doing what and what button you need to push. There's going to be a button doing one specific beep at you, and you push the button and move on. And it would be a bummer if comics and managing our work, our creative stuff was like that.
No, you're right. Right.
I bet you could work it out if you wanted to.
There are parts of it that can feel like that, but yes, that was not what got me into it. It was not the allure of a beep oriented process. Well, you know that Pink Floyd The Wall, you know that We Don't Need No Education video? That's what I want my life to be like. I'll make comics. All right.
Yep.
Well, cool. Good reflections today, Rob. And you tied it all back thematically into the bulk of the conversation, which means that it is now time for me to say, if you enjoyed this, if you like this, if you were, you know, amused or bemused or even delighted by what we talked about today and the way we did it, a great way that you could say thank you for what we've done is go check out leanintoart.com/workshops. We got the season of creative challenges going on right now, where most of the workshops there are $10 and the multi-part workshops are $40, which is for 4 hours of content. Every purchase gets you 12 hours of bonus content. Out of our Creative Topics Variety Pack and our keynote talks. And the Creative Topics Variety Pack comes with 11 hours of stuff. And here's just like a sampling of what's in there. Creating a cast of characters, a lab that we ran, which is 2 hours long. Was that the one, Rob, where we did the improvisational?
That one's I know it's free with purchase, but that one's so worth it alone, because honestly, it was a fun story that came out of it. And it was a great exercise as far as figuring out ways to generate story based on emotional ties.
And it's just all about associations, learning how to identify how we make associations with things and using that as a creative tool. And then, you know, topic related, using artificial deadlines as a creative tool, hour and a half long, that you get that. I don't want to say free, but you get it with purchase of any workshop in there. Mm-hmm. So we'll highlight other ones as the weeks go by. But yeah, do check that out at leanintoart.com/workshops. You know, you could even gift it to a friend. You can gift it to a friend, say, hey, I know you're going to be doing this NaNoWriMo thing. When you're stuck on an idea, here's 13 hours worth of stuff that you can listen to. And it only costs $10 out of your pocket. So, okay. That was it. Yeah. Rob?
Yeah, okay. I think that'd be it.
All right, we got 2 minutes to spare before Google Plus starts acting weird on us. So, cool. People should go check out your 24-hour comic. Where is it posted, Rob? You did post
it. Right now, it's only on Google Plus. It will actually occupy some bits on agz.me at some point soon as well. So,
okay, cool.
You can check me out on Google Plus.
And do check them out on Google Plus. I dig the Google Plus. I'd like to see more of the leaners there. Okay, well then, Rob, thanks again for this fun conversation. Thanks for all the great food for thought. Congratulations on finishing 24-hour comics day intact and with a finished book. That is no small shakes.
Thanks, Jersey. Yeah, thank you. This was a fun topic. Thank you for writing in. I'm trying to remember the names. It was Brian.
Brian and Dean.
Yeah, indeed. Right. So that was awesome. Thank you very much.
We're always looking to interact with more of you guys. You can email us at leanintoart@gmail.com. So until next time, everybody, I have been Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com and Jersey on Twitter.
And I've been Rob Stenzinger of interactive-storyteller.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.